Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
What was your special order?
You read it. I thought it was clear.
What was it?
Bring back life form. Priority one. All other priorities rescinded.
From the distant moon of LV-426...
to the other distant moon of LV-223.
We are Halloweenies.
Greetings, boys and ghouls, and welcome to another episode of Halloweenies, a horror franchise podcast. I am your host today, Rachel Reeves, and we are here today with our very first now showing episode of 2024. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, the applause. That's so wonderful. We're so excited to be here today. And because this is the first one of the year, maybe it's been a while since you've tuned in, or maybe you're not familiar with Now Showing. So in case you're not familiar, in case you forgot, because that was so last year, this is the episode where we talk about something old, something new. And because it's Halloweenies, yeah, there's probably going to be a tangent or two in there as well. And you know what? I'm pretty excited about 2024. We've already had some incredible films, so I'm really happy that we're going to get to talk about several of them. And don't worry, it's not just me. I have some of my other fellow Halloweenies co-hosts here to help us break it down, talk about these films. So first up is a fledgling, maybe. Is that what they call it? Or is that Radu? Does he call them fledglings? A Chicago fledgling.
Oh, my fledglings.
That was an awful version of Radu. I apologize for all subspecies fans out there. This is Wolfman Mac. And yeah, I'm really excited to be on this Now Showing. We were just talking about how I was a little concerned when we scheduled this because I was like, well, what's come out? It's only been a couple months. Actually, quite a bit's come out after we started talking about it, which is kind of great. And honestly, I had been so mired in like trying to catch all of the Oscar films and stuff like that, just because I like to do that, just like to be in the know, even though I'm still on the five. Let's do five films. 10 films. We don't need 10 films. You know which five of the 10 should be nominated when you have the 10. I think the nod is like we can give them a nod in some other way. Anyway. So I was excited to like actually when I started watching some of this stuff, some of this horror that I've been putting off, I was just like, what have I been doing? Like, I love watching this stuff. It's so good. It's fun. I got to get back on this train. I don't know why I ever got off. And if you're just joining us, I'm surprised that I even said that out loud because you know what? I never really got off. I just got distracted. I get distracted by the Oscars. I'm on the horror train for life. Yeah. No, I'm excited to talk about the movies that we watched. I had been putting them off, and I was glad that I kind of did this to myself so I would be forced to finally watch some of this stuff.
Yep. Life, you know, as they say, finds a way, and you will always come back home to your horror home. Oh, that's funny. Because that's a line from Jurassic Park. And we have a dino boy here with us today.
Oh.
All the way from Brooklyn, the Brooklyn dinosaur. I don't know. Say hi, Dan.
This is Dan Dilophosaurus Caffrey, or Dan Denver the Last Dinosaur Caffrey. It's funny. I forgot the Oscars were Sunday because this is the first year where I've, in a while, where I've seen most of the films. The only one I've yet to see is Past Lives. And one of the films this year, Zone of Interest, scared the hell out of me. I wouldn't necessarily call it a horror movie, but it unnerved me. in a way that few films have. And it did, I mean, I'm sure people know this already. I'm not saying anything new. Regardless of the movie's theme and what it's saying, just cinematically, the way it does it without showing you anything is, I can't think of another movie that does that. I mean, Blair Witch Project, I guess, but Blair Witch still shows you some things.
It's still steeped in that realm, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah,
and they're acknowledging it and talking about it the whole movie, you know?
Yeah,
whereas,
exactly.
Like, yeah.
Zone of Interest is about the opposite, right? It's about not talking about it. So definitely horror adjacent, definitely the most unnerving movie I maybe have seen in my lifetime. And Horror Things, that's scary per se, but feels kind of like a Burton throwback, a very grotesque, violent Burton throwback, with probably more complicated messaging than you'd find in a Tim Burton movie. So although I don't think there are any proper horror films nominated for anything this year, both of those feel somewhat adjacent for me. And I don't know if I'll be able to watch it on Sunday. I don't have cable or anything, but yeah, can you stream the Oscars on, I don't know.
I don't know what it's on, to be fair.
Into the interwebs?
I'm like doing all this. I tried to watch all these movies and I can't even watch it on Sunday. I'm busy.
So. It's I'm actually having drinks with a friend Sunday, so I probably won't see it anyway. But I think the Oscars are on ABC usually, right? Which is Disney? Who knows?
Sure.
Great question. Yeah. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I'm woefully behind on them. But a lot of those films, they feel dark though. So horror, it's like a lot of dark content in the best pictures category.
Killers of the Flower Moon, Anatomy of the Fall, also very disturbing in their own right.
Yeah.
I hear Past Lives is pretty feel good, but I don't know. You've seen it, right, Mac?
I wouldn't say feel good. I think it's more of a sad good movie. Mm-hmm. Also, Godzilla got nominated for effects. So
should have gotten nominated for a lot a lot more than that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's still my favorite movie. Oh, I don't know. Zone of Interest maybe is taking it over as favorite of the year, but God, I love that Godzilla movie. Wish it had more noms and nods to it.
That's true. Yeah. It's so good. I want to see it again.
Yeah. Same. I want to see it black and white, which I don't think I'll be able to do now.
Yeah.
Well, it was really good.
You never know. It'll be.
Oh, you saw it like that? No, Justin saw it black and white. Justin still hasn't seen it, right?
Yeah, no, sorry to cut you off. Yeah, Justin and I went with him to see it. He was like, I'll finally go see it because it was finally playing at a theater that he deemed fit for human beings.
A non-rat theater.
Yeah, so we went and it was a very late showing on a weeknight and I was like, do I really want to do this? And I was so glad I did. It was so fun and especially to watch it with him, but.
Was it better in black and white or color, just in terms of the effects and the scope of it?
You know, I saw it in color first, and I really enjoyed that. I don't think it takes away from it, even though it's in a period in which I think black and white even lends itself to it more. But it's beautiful both ways, so I didn't really affect my viewing. But Justin seemed to like it more, although he hasn't seen the color version. So
I'm interested
to see. I just think some of the effects pop more.
Mm-hmm.
And are like truly amazing in color. So
I feel that way about the Mist. Well, I guess I feel the opposite about the Mist director's cut. I love the Mist regardless, but I think the effects look better in black and white in the Mist just because they're so CG. Godzilla, obviously a newer movie, I think has better use of CG. I love the Mist effects, but the Mist for me really popped and felt like a Romero movie in black and white.
Rachel, you called it Tangent One.
I know. Did not take long at all.
Tangent minus one.
Halloweenies minus one.
That's not a tangent, because we're talking about the
I know,
state
I
of
know.
Cinema.
But I mean, only because we ended on The Mist. I was like, wait, how did we get there?
Yep.
When I say current state of cinema, I'm not talking about Kristen Sinema not running for Senate or whatever. There's a little politics.
All right, let's keep the Super Tuesday at the door.
I fucking hate that term, Super Tuesday. It sounds like a Walmart sale. I hate it. I hate any time anyone says it, regardless of which political party.
Hey,
they're
getting our political figures half off sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean they're all half off. I'd like to see them literally half off. You know what I'm saying, right?
Right.
Get the guillotine. No, I'm kidding. Just
kidding. We got a lot of Secret Service listening to this.
So 2024 horror, you guys.
Yeah, speaking of.
Let's talk about what we've been excited about, what we've been watching lately, what we've been, you know, flocking to the theaters for. Because I don't know about you, but I've been doing my best to get to the theaters and check out some movies. And I've been having a good time. So I would love to hear what you guys have been up to. Mac, what is your 2024 pick of choice today?
All right. I watched a lot of 2024 picks in the last week, and none in the theater, sadly. I will say I have not caught anything but Dune, I think, in the theater. I decided to talk about 2024's Out of Darkness, originally shot and, you know, done in 2022, but didn't quite make it out to the theaters until 2024, originally titled The Origin. I think that works in some ways, and I think that could have been a cool title. I think there's a better title out there somewhere. We'll find it one day. But the film is it's set in the Paleolithic era. Six humans arrive on the shores of an unknown land in search of a better life. As they journey towards the mountains in search of a cave to settle, the group encounters a mysterious something. And to say anything else about the movie, I feel like probably does a disservice. So I'm going to try my best to talk about it without giving anything away. Ultimately, I liked the movie. It lost me a little bit in the middle because I think I started to kind of realize something. And upon that realization, I checked out a little bit because I feel like we've been getting a lot of movies that are marketed in a misdirect way. So you're like, yeah. Oh, I'm going into this thinking it's this thing. And I'm really actually excited about it because we never get this. And then we don't get it again, right. Kind of thing. And I was, you know, we get something else, which is ends up being very interesting, but it's revealed fairly late. And I just feel like I was kind of fighting this kind of mad feeling about being duped. And I was like, will we ever see a woolly mammoth, a real woolly mammoth? I'll have to fire up 10,000 BC, you know. Hey, we see the bones of, like, that's, you know, true. I mean, and again, I was like, I think when I saw the trailer, I kind of assumed that it wasn't going to go that way because they don't really show anything in the trailer. And that's the whole thing. The mystery of it is the whole reason to watch, right? And the performances are pretty strong. Safia Oakley Green is the kind of the lead and does a really, really great job. They all do really good, I think. It's pretty scary. I thought it was pretty effective. You know, I think I've seen this done better. It's spiritual brother, sister entity out there, I think, is Bone Tomahawk with a different lesson.
Yeah.
A very different lesson. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's as good as Bone Tomahawk, because I really love that movie, but it's in that realm. And you know what I love? Survival stories. And yes. If you have a tight, like, 5-6 person cast, and that's it, and you're not precious about those characters.
Right.
I think that lends itself to a really good story. And I think they did a pretty decent job. I can't even remember what I think I rated. I think I gave this like a not brilliant rating, but the thing is with movies, when you sit with them and you really think about them, you know, I'm always rating these things like immediately after. I really should not do that, because this I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think it's kind of grown on me a little bit more. Have you all seen it?
No, I want to.
That was a long rant. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I really want to. I was hoping to catch it before this episode, but I haven't. Yeah, I think, I don't know if I know the twist, I guess, but yeah, I more or less know what it's about. I'm working on a play right now that's about woolly mammoths, and we do have woolly mammoths.
Ooh,
on stage.
I'll have to go. Where is that playing right now, Dan?
It's called The Tusk Hunters. There's just a reading of it that's going to be through the civilians in New York and sometime in June. But no, not a full production yet, but maybe one day, because I believe in showing the woolly mammoths. But are there any prehistoric beasts in it, or is that spoiling it? Not non-human prehistoric beasts?
I'm not going to say anything.
Don't spoil it. Yeah.
I can't say.
I did see this in the theater. And
oh, you
I
saw
loved
it too.
It that way. Yeah, I saw it. I caught this too in the theater. And I mean, yes. Does it stick the landing? I don't know. Debatable. But also, I wasn't mad about it. But this is one of those films, kind of like Influencer last year, we talked about just like using the landscape and the area and the setting it's in. And man, mm-hmm. they milked the locations in this. I don't even know where it's filmed, but maybe it was New Zealand or something. Yeah, it looks so good. And that goes so far. And it felt real. Like, it felt like, I mean, there's no studios. Like, this is all out in the open. And you just felt like the loneliness. And you felt how desperate this little group of, you know, survivors, hunters that are were forced to leave where they were to find food. And I think that that went so far. They also developed their own language for the film, which I thought was really an interesting choice.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
didn't they
that
do that for Quest for Fire back in the day? It's also about Neanderthals. No, for real, did they?
No idea.
I'm pretty sure.
It's very possible.
I could be wrong. I've never seen Quest for Fire. I know, Aliens Dominion, Ron Perlman's in it, but it's also about Paleolithic humans. I think they got Anthony Burgess.
I thought they got Tolkien.
They got Tolkien to write Elvish.
See him on a separate Quest of Fire.
No, I think they actually got Anthony Burgess, who wrote A Clockwork Orange, to develop the language, because he was a linguist also and developed a language
that makes
for
sense.
Alex and his droogs and that. I think I might be wrong on that. I've never seen Quest for Fire. I've wanted to for a long time.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I'm pretty sure they made up their whole new language, and which I can't imagine being in that position as an actor. Like, let alone memorizing your own lines and then having to perform, but then perform in a made-up language and actually know what you're saying and sell it. Like, that seems like a lot.
Is it just like,
no,
like,
no, it's not. It feels like a real language. I'm sure it's based, rooted in some sort of language, you know, but I don't know what that would be. But it sounded
the earliest
real.
Language, right?
The Klingon
music.
The cusp of Klingon.
Yes, yeah, the Klingon origin story. This is where it started.
Hence the original title, The Origin.
Yeah, see, there it goes. I loved the score for this. I think that Adam Levine? I'm going to butcher your... Yes, Adam Levine from Maroon 5. This is his...
It was Adam... Janata Zowski?
Yeah, sorry, Adam, if we're butchering your name, but you did incredible work on the score. I really, like, it felt very present and very creative, and also I thought fit the setting really well. Like, it didn't go, like, overly, like, oh, primitive man sounding, but also just, I don't know, in the theater, I think that was, it was just surrounding me, and I thought it sounded so great, especially because it's such a small cast and the landscape is so big. That's a lot of space to fill with sound, and I just thought that he did an incredible job.
I would say, Rich, my only knock really was at first, and maybe it's because I watched this like in the mid-morning, it was so dark. It was almost at moments, which makes sense for the movie, so I kind of, I was like, I just picked the wrong time to watch this. But it was almost as dark as, you know, AVP Requiem. And there were some moments where I was like, am I supposed to see something here? But I don't think I was. And I think that was a decision. And as the movie went on, it wasn't all like that. There was just some key moments where I was like, I gotta cover some blinds or something. Like,
I just love seeing fresh. I know that it's, obviously we've seen films that take place, you know, way back when before, but I just love seeing something I haven't seen for a minute, right? Like, when it feels like so many films and filmmakers and stories are kind of retreading the same sort of past. It's just nice when something pops out of the darkness and feels a little bit like, oh, okay, cool. Something completely different that I haven't seen for a while. Like, I love that. It doesn't feel like it's chasing a trend. It feels like a story that these people, I mean, it was in development forever. So clearly they really wanted to tell it because it took a while to get out there. Yeah. But I'm glad it did.
Yeah. No, it's funny. I looked at my Letterboxd review just now and it said thinking on this. So I didn't say anything initially. So, and I also raised my rating. I'm giving it 3 stars. I thought it was solid.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, on the complete other spectrum, visually, stylistically, everything, I want to talk about Lisa Frankenstein, you guys.
Ooh, okay.
Have either of you seen this?
I have not.
I just watched it.
Okay, good. Okay, good. I'm looking forward to hearing what you thought about this.
I am too.
Uh-oh. This was one of my most...
to banding around,
Okay, good. this was one of my most anticipated films of the year, so it was really nice that we get it so early. I don't have to wait, you know, like 8 months for it to come out. I left happy with it. Did it exceed all my expectations? No. But I left overall feeling really good about it. I find visually, it's hard, you know, when something is, you know, rooted in nostalgia, right, and like attached to a very specific time period. We've seen that a lot where it can feel, I'm just thinking of like Stranger Things, where sometimes it feels like a little bit too excessive. But I think that this period, this 1989 period, I was like, oh yeah, I recognize this house. I recognize these like furnishings. It felt very authentic in a way that didn't feel too overly cloying or like trying to get you to buy into the nostalgia. I thought the performances was great. I just wish it would have leaned a little bit harder into certain things. And I think this is kind of the, well, new-ish filmmaker.
Yeah.
And then also just trying to get the PG-13 rating, which, you know what, I'm not like, that's fine. I think it should be a PG-13 film. I think I personally was just hoping for a little bit more violence or a little bit more, I don't know, shown, because it does feel like they cut away a lot and it's not necessarily shown all the time, which is fine. But
yeah,
I also, what else was I going to say about it? Oh, I mean, Catherine Newton is great. It almost feels like it's overly like edited too. I don't know if you got that feeling, Mac.
Yeah,
like if it felt like it was edited weird a little bit.
I think the idea is really cool, and you know, there's a lot of fun moments. And honestly, I wasn't looking at it like a PG-13 movie. I didn't realize it was PG-13 until after. Maybe that kind of had something to do with where I ended up with the movie. But I did. I felt. And when I found out it was, well, Zelda Williams, right? And it's her first film.
Yeah.
But she's directed some other stuff, music videos and stuff like that. And I just felt like it was stunted. So yeah, maybe it might've been the editing. And I think if you don't have an editor, and I didn't look who edited this movie, unfortunately, I should do that now before I say anything. But I just feel like if you don't have someone that's like really understands comedy, I just felt like it felt stunted, and it didn't feel like, I didn't laugh a lot in the movie. I recognize that sequences and things should be funny, and like that, like the dressing up, like this moment should be really funny, but it just didn't land a lot for me on that front. And when it's supposed to be like a comedy horror, and then when you don't have a lot of the horror because it's PG-13 and you can't show a lot of the stuff, it kind of ended up becoming not what I wanted it to be. The soundtrack's cool, and the music that they use is really cool. I did like that portion of the film. It definitely has an aesthetic. I think part of it kind of took away from me though. I was like, it's trying to do this kind of like Edward Scissorhands thing, but then it loses it a lot when it's not at the home. And I felt like it needed to be a little more throughout the entire thing. Like the school didn't feel like that at all. It felt like a school today, you know, except people are dressed in '80s garb or '89 garb, you know?
Yeah. And I think when I'm talking about the editing, the part that I was a little disappointed at was just the transition from like when we meet Lisa, Catherine Newton, we meet her in kind of one sort of headspace, and then we see her sort of transition into this darker, more like Heather's kind of vibe, right? And I felt like that transition was a little just sudden almost. Like I wish that transition would have been a little smoother. It felt a little kind of awkward almost, like it was handled a little bit awkwardly.
Yeah.
Not that it's like a drastic change in the character, you know, when she meets this reanimated corpse played by Cole Sprouse, it does like open up a lot of, you know, inside her, and she ends up kind of, I feel like Heather's is a good comparison. Like she meets this guy and sort of inadvertently goes down, you know, a darker path, and she kind of embraces that and learns a lot about herself, and that's great, but it didn't feel quite as natural as I would have liked it to. It did feel like it was just sort of pieced together, and it's like, oh, that feels weird. There was a lot I really liked. There was a lot of really surprising things that I just appreciate. And it's so funny when you see something on film and you realize it's not that big a deal in the grand scope of things, but then it also kind of points out the fact that you don't really see that sometimes, and it's just like, oh, that's interesting, like they put that in there, like, okay, thank you, Diablo Cody. Like the relationship between Lisa and her stepsister Taffy, like that went, that relationship I felt like pushed against everything that you would think that you would see in a film like this.
See, I agree. For most of the movie I was like, thank you for not falling in the trap of just having this kid's characters be totally at odds.
Yeah.
But then it does this thing later that I don't think is earned. And then it's really messy at the end. I think it's a really messy ending. And the messaging, I'm
surprised.
Genuinely surprised they did what they did in the movie. And if so, I would recommend this. If only for you to understand what we're talking about right now, because I was genuinely like, are we doing this? And what are we saying? And not that this is trying to like be a message movie necessarily, but yeah. I was pretty surprised. I'm surprised more people aren't talking about it. And now granted, I stayed away from reviews, so maybe people are talking about it, but I was genuinely surprised.
Yeah.
And it's rough because I know what you're saying, which are like, there are things in the movie where I just felt like, it felt like a first draft, and not trying to knock the writing or Diablo Cody. It's more like I felt like I could see a really awesome movie in there. But I think the line that it has to walk is that it's very much like Heathers in that tone. And if you make it R, I feel like it's too much like Heathers. It, you know what I mean? Because then you could go all out with all that stuff. So I feel like they were trying to walk this really wonky line because like, the stuff I loved about it was like just the quirkiness of like the tanning bed and just and the even the reason
so
for them
fun.
Having it and stuff and just all those kinds of ideas. There's a lot of awesome ideas in it that I really wanted to like latch on to. Yeah, and obviously, you know, again with it being PG-13, I think it's directed towards a younger audience, and so you know anything to get more kids into horror, you know, I'm always for. And I think it will absolutely speak to that crowd for sure. And I was really trying to rack my brain other than my boyfriend's back, which you know, I like because I saw it when I was a kid, but I don't remember, even then, I don't remember being a really great movie. I just think it's like a really, you know, fun movie. And maybe that's all this needs to be, you know, so.
I agree. I think it's super fun. I would still like recommend people watch it 100%, like especially it's on VOD, like you can go and find this. It's really fun. Like I did have a lot of fun with it and I did laugh and there's a lot there to love. And I do think that it's doing some things that if I was younger, I would be so excited. Like this movie would be my personality. Like there's so much there. I loved, seriously, some of the lines that Lisa says, it's just like she talks about like, I got to go change my pad. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, I love that that's in a movie. Like, yes, normalize that shit. Please put that in a movie. Like, thank you, Diablo. It's just stuff that I'm not used to seeing. And it's just those little lines that are so great. And Cole Sprouse doesn't say a goddamn word until the very end of the movie. And I was shocked at that. Like, just those little decisions that I think will actually resonate and age really well, even though it does make some interesting choices. I would love to see a slightly different cut of this film. And, you know, I don't know if that cut even exists, but like, give me an unrated cut. Give me, I don't know. Is there some.
Let's cut it, Rach. Let's get our hands on it and cut it. Because seriously, there's that little bit of editing, I think. And, you know, like after a joke is said, cut away to the next scene or something. You know what I mean? Like there was just, sometimes there's a little bit meandering and look, comedy is hard. It's the hardest genre to do. So
yeah,
it's tough, but you know, yeah.
Also Carla Gugino, how you say her name, is incredible. she's so good.
Hey, you know, while
Taffy, her daughter, kind of subverts everything that you would expect out of that sort of relationship, she leans expectations, and so I just loved kind of having that dynamic and that relationship there. That's enough about Lisa. Out on VOD, go watch it if you can. Dan, what is your 2024 pick that you would like to talk about?
So I have not seen a lot of new horror in 2024. Not that there's been a ton of it, but you haven't seen anything in the theaters. I've seen movies in theaters, but outside of Zone of Interest and Poor Things, which we already talked about, my theater going has been more. I saw that Wim Wenders movie, Perfect Days, and Not a fan. Yeah. So anyway, point being, I don't want to sound like I was scraping the bottom of the barrel or anything for horror, but I've been seeking, right? Like I've been looking for new, fresh horror in 2024. So the movie that I ended up watching, full disclosure, so it's made by a friend of mine. So that's not what I'm talking about here. I genuinely did like it. If I watched it and I thought it sucked, I wouldn't be talking about it. But it is called I Am a Channel. And it was co-written by my friend Christine Remyitsi, who Mac was actually in a play with a while back. She used to do theater with us back in Chicago. Oh, yeah. She co-wrote it with a guy, I think his name is Brian. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Weeby? W-I-E-B-E. I don't know him. I mean, he directed it. And essentially, it's, without giving too much away, it's about a would-be influencer. She's not an influencer yet. She's scraping by and, you know, commodifying things like vulnerability and trauma and like talking, quote unquote, really honestly with her viewers. Of course, that's very performative of like we're all guilty of doing. And she has a realization that may or may not be true. And as a result, she starts to amass more followers. And what I really appreciate about it, so it's Christine and her husband, Ryan Imhoff, who's also an awesome actor. And he actually made a horror movie during the pandemic called Fresh Hell that I loved that she's also in. And Fresh Hell did this, and so did the I Am a Channel. They took the idea of really using limitations. So just filming on Zoom, just filming on a phone, like all the footage in I Am a Channel is what her viewers will be watching. There's a couple scenes with her and her partner in it, played by Ryan, but there it's even those are shot are like when the phone stops rolling, you know, so it's still seen from that vantage point. And I'm a huge fan of when filmmakers take what they have to work with, which in this case was not a lot. I don't think it had a huge budget or anything. I think they had their phones and a couple Chicago theater friends to be in one scene that requires some more people to act in it. And they just went with it. And I feel like they used their limitations to their advantage, even though it's shot mostly on phones. And I don't know what their tech setup was as far as mics go and everything like that. They still managed to pull off some really cinematic shots. There's this one that I think I talked about online that takes place in Horner Park. And it feels expensive. And it feels like something that isn't limited by budget. It's them sitting there and you see a plane flying overhead and it kind of dips into her head. It's just really well composed and rich looking despite being shot on a phone, which I think makes the movie really unnerving. Yeah. Shout out to them. Go watch on Tubi.
Yeah. I was going to say to y'all, I tried the other day, I was like, oh, you know, I really want to check this out. So I pulled it up. I had time at my lunch and I was like, I want to start watching this so I can get it in before this episode, and I pulled up Tubi's app, which is, it's fine, but you can't search anything on it. You can't use the search. You can't search.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I could not find it on there. And I was like going, I was like on the web at work, like, all right, what is it listed as, drama, thriller, you know? And I was like trying to look for it. So I will definitely catch it though. I did want to see that. I saw it. She posted it and created the channel on Insta, and I've been meaning to watch it, so that's awesome.
I'm a Tubi web browser boy. I watch it. I can't do the app.
Sounds dangerous.
Look, I watch so many. Tubi always has just really random movies that I love or I've been wanting to check out. Like I remember I watched Trees Lounge for the first time on Tubi during the pandemic, which I'd always wanted to see, and it was like the one place it was streaming. So I love Tubi. No shade against Tubi, but yeah, I highly recommend the web browser rather than the app. Sorry, Tubi.
No, hey, listen, Tubi has helped me cross off some deep cut Charles Bronson films over the years, so I appreciate them so much.
Under your recommendation, Rachel, I'm pretty sure I watched The White Buffalo on Tubi. I don't, it's not on there anymore, but
it'll probably be back.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
I caught Scanners 2, and I'm hoping to watch Scanners 3 soon, which these are movies that you used to be able to, you'd definitely see them at the video store.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
But you know, for some reason, they'd always be available at the video store because Scanners 2 and 3 were in high demand back then.
I'll say this too. Our friend Andrew Bales was in a really good horror movie that was technically from last year called Black Mold. That was also from, it wasn't just like on Tubi, premiered on Tubi. So I feel like Tubi's got, Blaze Disgusting has a good article on that. But I know Tubi's not, I don't think they're a production, like they're not a studio. I think they're just a distributor. But they do have a good foothold on, oh, cool, we're going to premiere some new indie horror films on our streaming site. Like, they've done that a few times the past year. So, hey, not a bad space to be in.
No, yeah, they've been, yeah, they buy up some cool films and definitely, and they get paid per watch, I believe. So you guys, if there's something you like, put it on.
Hell man, I would, if I want to make a movie, put on Tubi. Tubi, just improve your app. That's all we're asking. We love you. Just
just add a search bar, That's all I ask. Because there was a ton of stuff on there. I just couldn't use the search engine.
Yeah, well, okay, you guys, you know what Tubi's great for is some really fun old stuff. So why don't we talk about something that's a bit older but is newer to us? And I love this. I think it's always just so fun, you know, because you can't see everything, right? So it makes sense that we would go back and find some older things that are new to our eyeballs. So Mac, what is your old but new pick for the day?
Well, Dan threw out something and I really was like, oh, I gotta watch something in this vein. And I don't know if you're going to talk about it anymore, Dan, but it was not where I ended up going. So
wait, what was it? What was it?
You had said Stage Fright.
Oh yeah, Justin.
But you're not going to talk about that, right?
No, I didn't watch Stage Fright.
Okay,
no, yeah, I didn't, because Justin recommended it, but there are a few different movies called that, so I wasn't sure which one to start. I probably could have looked it up and figured it out, but texted him.
But basically, in my head, I was like, I got to go along those lines of films I haven't seen in that era. And then Justin reminded me that I just watched this movie and I was like, oh yeah, that totally works. And we haven't really talked about this. Alfred Hitchcock's Rope. So the movie was shot in 48. It's based on a 1929 play by Patrick Hamilton, based on a real killing committed by Leopold and Loeb in 1924 in Chicago. I don't know if we really want to like be known for that. But
there was a musical when I first moved to Chicago called Thrill Me, the Leopold and Loeb story. And so I know they're Chicago serial killers. That's my knowledge of them ends there.
Oh, was Tom Atkins in it?
Yeah, he was in the musical.
Hey, yeah.
Wait, is Tom Atkins in Rope? I've never seen Rope.
No, but you said Thrill Me, and that's like a big line of his in...
Well, could Tom Atkins have been in Rope? He would have been pretty young.
Is he old enough to be a boy, 90, though?
Hey, Mr. Stewart, I got that rope for you.
is that a line in the movie?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Hey, Mr. Stewart. Yeah, Tom Atkins is... how old is this motherfucker? He's like,
find out how old he was in 1948. And let me keep talking about this.
I'm going to Google how old was Tom Atkins in 1948.
So it stars Jimmy Stewart, John Dahl, Fairley Granger, and a handful of other people. It essentially kind of tried to shoot it in real time. Right. So it's funny because after it was over, I was like, oh, it's based on a play. And it was just kind of shot like a play. I wish it was kind of used the medium more. But the whole point of the movie, Justin pointed out to me, is that they did try to make it seem like it was one long take. And I think back then they only had 10 minutes, you know, of like continuous shooting before they had like switched the reel or whatever. So there's a lot of like close-ups on someone's back and then kind of moves over their shoulder and it's the next shot. But it's cool. Pretty seamless. Yeah. And it's done really well. And the tension is just there. And there's something that Hitchcock knows how to do is build the tension. And there's this great sequence at the piano and the music, kind of just this guy playing the piano, and he just kind of keeps getting more frenetic as Jimmy's talking to him, and it's just done really, really well, and I thought it was really cool. Yeah, I just like that. Either of you seen this movie?
I have not, but I have heard that Alfred Hitchcock is called the master of suspense. So it doesn't surprise me that
you're right. I almost did a spit take.
No, it's weird. I mean, understatement of the century. I love what Hitchcock I've seen. He's great. Hitchcock's great. But I've really only seen Psycho, Vertigo, Rear Window. Like, that might be it. But he's a huge blind. I've never even seen The Birds. He's a big blind spot.
Oh, wow. Oh, Dan, check it out. I'm saying this because I just finally watched it in its entirety this last year. Because for me as well, huge blind spot. Yeah. Justin had this collection, and I'll find it. I'll take a picture of it and I'll post it. My parents got him for his birthday one year. It was Alfred Hitchcock collection. It was like 9 films or something. And he was really into it when I was young. So it was always kind of on in the background. And, you know, he tells this story about how we saw Psycho and we were like told to go in a room during a party. We were very young. They turned something on. It was black and white. My mom was like, cool. It was Psycho. We were really young watching Psycho in the other room. But I just never, I don't know. I missed the boat on like that train.
You missed the boat on that train?
I missed the boat on that train.
Mixing some metaphors there, my friend.
Yeah. And like, I just felt like it was weird. I came back to these movies sporadically, like Vertigo and North by Northwest and some of the ones you mentioned, Dan, and I just never really got around to all of them. And for no reason, they're like all over the place. They're all on, a lot of them are on Criterion. They're short. A lot of them are like an hour and 20, hour and 30 minutes, especially some of his earlier stuff. So I just the other day, I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch a Hitchcock movie, one a month for the rest of the year, just to knock out a bunch of these movies. And Rope was the first one that I was like, because I had just watched Rear Window for the first time too. That and Birds.
Rear Window is great. I've also seen Double Indemnity. That's the other one I've seen, which I like.
Well, and the thing with Rear Window is like, I feel like I know all these stories and I know what the MacGuffins are and everything for a lot of these, because they've been done and remade a lot and stuff like that. So it's hard for me to have the drive to go back. And I'm like, well, I know where this is going. But what you forget is that they're executed so well. And these actors, and like Stewart's great and John Dahl's great. And they just do such a good job. And it's just it's of another time. And you just don't see movies like this anymore. I mean, in this acting style as well, which I think some people have a hard time because it is kind of like a play. People kind of have a play acting.
Right. We're going to talk like this now. Yeah.
But you know what? I'll romanticize it because
it's great. I love it.
You don't get it anywhere else. So it is kind of cool to see it and see it done really well.
I view it as like an aesthetic choice. The same way Poor Things has a very specific style of acting that's very much in line with the vision and what he's trying to do. I think that's how I look at that 50s kind of acting, 40s, 50s acting. And Casablanca's like that. Casablanca's amazing.
And for people that don't know Rope, basically what it is it opens with them killing someone. These two guys kill this person. It's literally the first scene, so I'm not giving anything away. And then they put the body in a trunk. And they are like, we're going to have this dinner party here and we're going to put all the food on this trunk and no one's going to know that this body's in the trunk the whole time. And we've committed the perfect murder and we're going to get away with it.
Amazing.
And the rest of them, and then the dinner party starts. So it's like, there's this tension, the whole movie, like,
it's great.
Oh, like, are they going to get found out? You want them to get found out, but then you're like, I don't know. It's just done really well. It's real cool. What it's based on was a murder. Basically, these two guys in Chicago in the 20s killed this guy, and they were basically obsessed with, they thought they were these like intellectuals and that they were like, oh, we're going to get away with this perfect murder. And so that's kind of like the emphasis for it. They didn't get away with it. Spoiler alert, they didn't get away with it. They both went to jail.
Didn't they get executed, or am I making that
up? One got killed in jail. The other one ended up getting out. And I think it's because they both lied about who did it. They were like, I was the driver and he did it, because it happened in a car. And the other one was like, no, I drove the car. He was the one that did it. So they both got convicted. But I think the one that ended up living was the one that probably was like driving, I'm assuming, because he ended up getting out, I think. I got to look a little bit deeper into that, but that's not what we're here to talk about. So don't get mad at me for not knowing all the details.
You need to watch Thrill Me, the Leopold and Loeb story.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it's a musical. That's all I know.
I'm leaving it up to your devices to watch more content out there.
Instead of watching like four Ghoulies movies this Halloween, maybe I should watch four Hitchcock movies I haven't seen.
Yeah. Or double feature it. Like watch a Ghoulies and a Hitchcock.
Oh man, back to back. I mean, the only Ghoulies I haven't seen, I think, are the two worst ones. Or do some subspecies. Why not? Right? We talked about Radu.
Just a little sweet and sour, you know.
We'll see. Yeah. What is he saying, Vanilla Sky?
I appreciate the
sweet.
Rachel, have you seen Rope?
I confess, I am also a stranger on this train.
Oh.
See what I'm doing here. Also, I realized it would have been funny, Dan, if you did watch Stage Fright, but not that Stage Fright, but Hitchcock's Stage Fright, and then you would have accidentally...
Well, I think that's why I was confused, because I was like, oh, well, it's got to be the legit classic one that Justin's talking about. But then I'm like, I think it's a newer one that's in color, but then there's a Hitchcock one. So maybe he was talking about that. Are they related?
I think he finally saw the 87 Stage Fright.
That's what I thought.
Watch me be wrong now, but I'm pretty sure that's why I was like, oh, I got to watch like a schlocky horror film from like the late 70s or 80s or something. And then I was like, I don't know, actually, we don't talk about Alfred Hitchcock on here ever.
Yeah,
and, we really don't. Yeah, I mean, we talk about Psycho here and there, but that's about it.
I think
you
a lot of it's
not influence.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's like horror adjacent stuff, like Suspension. You know, it's like not necessarily violent. Yeah, I mean Psycho, I guess you could say is violent, but
well, he is the master of suspense, as what he is known as. So
I've heard that.
Makes sense.
Well, I love the idea of watching one a month. I might do that because yeah, I've seen some, but not everything, not nearly everything. So it would be.
I mean, he's got a lot, right? Especially pre his famous films, right? I mean, he's got a ton,
way more than I thought. I didn't realize he had done so much in his early, like, there's just a ton. I couldn't believe it. So I've got plenty. I'm not going to get to it by the end of the year. There's going to be a ton more to watch. So I'll probably continue it into the next year.
Mm-hmm.
I picked some of like the heavy hitters that I just haven't seen. And I've always wanted to. I'll post about it.
A similar director in terms of quality and reputation and prestige. I decided to fill in a blind spot for myself. And I watched 1982's A Stranger is Watching, directed by Sean S. Cunningham.
Hey, look, he's carved out his own.
How many films? Let's see. How many films has Sean S. Cunningham directed?
Yes. But yeah, I think this might be like the only thing I haven't seen of his. And I have this really bad habit where I will like buy, and especially when I was like working at a record store for 15 years. And so I could see him all the time and just like set it aside or buy it or whatever. I would buy something that I haven't seen. And so this has been sitting on my shelf for a while. So I like to use these episodes as an opportunity to like, all right, finally, I'm finally going to watch this thing that I own. So this is one that I did watch. And it's not great, but there are some things that I really enjoy about it. You can definitely, I think, feel the Friday the 13th vibes. So before I talk about it a little bit, have either of you seen this?
I have not.
No, I haven't. Right. Now, I had a question because I'm looking at it here. It says it came out in 82, but was it filmed before Friday the 13th and then came out because of that? Or did he actually direct it after the fact? You know?
Well, in like the promotional stuff, it does say from the director of Friday the 13th, A Stranger is Watching. So I think that's, you know, he had already done it at
probably
that point because they were using that as a way to sell this movie. But is it horror? I don't know, arguable, but it is kind of like a suspense thriller. And it's just about this young girl and her dad, she sees her mom get attacked and murdered. And then a few years later, I think it's 2 years later, a guy breaks into her house and kidnaps her again. And she realizes it's the same guy and that she accused the wrong man of doing the murder.
Yikes.
And she also gets kidnapped alongside Kate Mulgrew, which I love. So
strange.
Captain Janeway herself is also in it.
I just wanted to cut in. I just picked up the other day. I started watching Voyager again. I had stopped after the first season, but I was like, you know what? I'm a completionist. I got to watch all this. I've been watching like Voyager, like a bunch of it, like at least the first like five episodes of the second season. And then Justin mentioned that Mulgrew is in this. And I was like, oh, that's wild.
Yeah, so she's in it. Cool. She's younger. She is the young girl's dad's new girlfriend, who's also a reporter. And so she gets kidnapped together. Rip Torn is the bad guy. He's the one who kidnaps them. He takes them underneath Grand Central Station, is where he hides out with them. And I believe it really was filmed under Grand Central Station. So there's a lot of like, you know, train tracks and gross, disgusting rooms and stuff. And it's just about them trying to get out in this kidnapping scheme and this girl piecing together what happened to her mom and just kind of this sweet relationship between, you know, this his dad's new girlfriend and herself. And I really like the dynamic between the two women. It wasn't, similarly to Lisa Frankenstein, it wasn't antagonistic at all. And just like very sweet how they were interacting. And Rip Torn is, I don't know, it's just kind of cool seeing him. I haven't seen him a lot in like younger roles.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't do a lot. He definitely is like, I'm a bad guy kind of thing. He doesn't say a whole lot. His motivations are a little murky. I'm going to be honest. I'm not entirely sure what all the motivations are. I'm not sure if it's executed very well there. It's based on a Mary Higgins Clark book who I loved when I was younger. I wrote her a letter and she wrote me back when I was like,
she did.
Really?
What'd she say?
Yeah. Oh, she was so sweet. I talked about how I wanted to be a writer and she, well, I don't know if it's her or secretary, but she like really did sign it and was just like, I have it somewhere, but it was just very sweet, just about like follow your dreams, anything you can do. Like, here's some tips for like how to keep writing. And she signed it and sent it to me and responded. So very cute.
That's awesome.
I always have a soft spot for her because obviously nobody has to do that. But maybe she saw my letter when I, in my little kid handwriting and was like, how can I not respond to this?
Right.
And so Stranger is watching. Also, I couldn't help it. If you see pictures of it, I couldn't help like Rip Torn has very strong Mama Fratelli vibes from the Goonies.
I saw a picture a second ago. I know you're talking about.
Do you see what I'm talking
everything.
About? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got this like goofy like newsboy hat on, but I was just like, oh, he looks like I couldn't get over it. He looks like Mama Fratelli. Just kind of gruff like that too. So that lets you know what you're in for there. But I love like completing directors' filmographies just to kind of see like their style and see all the uniting threads, because there are like there's a lot of POV shots. There are some really shocking moments of violence in a not very violent movie where it's like, okay, yep, this guy has been in the horror genre. Just how it's like you wouldn't expect it. There's some kind of just brutal sort of set pieces. And so you can definitely tell it's somebody from the horror genre, and just the way that it's filmed and the way some of the more horrific action sequences are filmed. It's like, okay, I can see Friday the 13th and the DNA of this film. So it's kind of interesting to watch from that perspective. Also a great Lalo Schifrin score, who I'm always a huge fan of him. And I think we're going to be talking about him again. So that's kind of interesting that we have multiple people connecting some of the films that we're talking about. But I watched that on a Blu-ray, but I think that you can also rent it on VOD. I don't think it's streaming anywhere. But if you're a Sean Cunningham completionist, I would recommend checking it out.
I was going to ask, what are the other movies that you've seen?
That Cunningham has done? I've seen Deep Star 6.
Yeah.
And the New Kids. New Kids... Spader in that. James Spader is brutal. Like, that movie's... James Spader is... His character is dark in that movie. If you want to see some possibly problematic behavior from a character, James Spader in an early movie, you can watch that. And Lori Loughlin, I think, is in that, too.
Yeah, the possibly problematic Lori Loughlin, too.
last night in the Secret Window commentary for Losers Club, we were talking about the cheating scandal that ATC scandal came up. Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. But hey, she's Aunt Becky.
Oh my gosh. Also, bring it back home, because we were just talking about this.
Just saw it.
Tom Atkins is also in New Kids.
There we go. Oh, he's 88, by the way. He's my grandmother's age.
Okay.
Okay, so wait. Well, yeah, what's the math there? How old was he during...
What year was Rope?
48.
So he would have been... I'm horrible at math. I don't know why. I thought I could just do that in my head.
Oh, gosh.
What was it?
I don't know. The tension.
I think he was like 12.
Perfect newsboy age. Perfect.
Hey, Mr. Leopold, I want to buy some rope, or what was the line you said?
Hey. Well, first of all, he doesn't say it at all. There's no kid in it. But I just imagined him saying something like that, yeah.
I'm just imagining Tom Atkins, how he looks in the fog, but just short with a newsboy
hat. Little boy with a mustache.
Yeah.
Makeup over the mustache like...
Cesar Romero.
Yeah, Cesar Romero.
Cesar Romero came up last night on the commentary, too. Look at this. Oh. Cause a wheel.
Yep. All right, well, that's my pick. Dan, what? I'm so excited to talk about.
All right, so little prelude. I cannot thank Jen Adams enough for recommending that Grady Hendrix book, Paperbacks from Hell, which is the history of 70s and 80s horror paperbacks. And there's a whole section on indigenous horror, and they, of course, brought up The Manitou, which is the book by Graham Masterton. I have been hearing about this movie and subsequently the book for years. The first time I remember hearing of it was our friend Roy Ivy, who's a musician we used to play with, and he worked at Groupon with me. He was doing a solo show, and he just used the image of like the little person as the Manitou after his birth, like on the poster. It was just like Roy Ivy. And I remember I chatted, I'm like, what the fuck's on your poster? He's like, the Manitou. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, you've never seen it. But even that, he didn't explain the context of what it was in the movie. It was just this little person covered in placenta with these weird fangs and contacts. In Paperbacks from Hell, they, of course, explain what it is about. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably know what it's about. It's essentially about a woman who has a tumor on her neck, or she thinks it's a tumor. And it turns out it is actually a fetal version of an indigenous medicine man who, to preserve himself from Dutch colonizers, created a Manitou, which is a spirit of himself that is getting rebirthed in this woman. So it's a tumor that opens. Oh, but they've x-rayed the tumor to the point where it's mutated him and made him like hobbled when he comes out. So that's what we're working with there. So Paperbacks from Hell, most of the books in that book are hard to find now because they're out of print. So I'm reading as many of them as I can find, which the library does not have a lot of them, but they do have the Manitou because the book is considered somewhat of a horror classic. It's only like 170 pages. I read it this week. And after reading it, was like, I have to watch this movie. I have to see, because the book is batshit. I mean, you have the birthing scene. I don't think we can spoil the old movies, right? A little bit. I won't say like how, like, I don't think this is spoiling.
You can spoil the old ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the
birthing scene, which is crazy. And then, I mean, just the concept is crazy, right? And then there's the birthing scene. And then from there, the Manitou is, they form this like circle that he can't leave. So he keeps just like summoning all these weird like snake gods and everything. But also too, it's very clear that Grandmaster Tin just loves Lovecraft. And he's pretty much just using Lovecraft shit as like native gods, which, you know, could be seen as somewhat problematic, but whatever. You have to go along. You have to ride the snake. You have to go along with this book. It's just.
Oh, ride the snake, eh?
Dad, the snake god, or rather. And the ending is just insane. Like, the way they think they can defeat the Manitou just is bonkers. So anyway, I'm reading this book, and I'm like, and I'm going, okay, I'm going to watch this movie. There's no way they do all this stuff in the movie, because it's the 70s. They don't have the effects for it. They're not going to go all out. And they certainly do. And, you know, some of the effects are a little shoddy, but they're shoddy in that kind of, like, psychedelic Willy Wonka way that I really like. And I just really admired that. I mean, they changed some things. Like, they make more of a relationship between the main characters, like this con artist medium, like tarot card reader, who suddenly gets roped into actually having to help this woman. In the movie, they make them like they're old friends. In the book, they're not. So I just respected the movie that, oh no, they're going to keep that ending. Oh no, they're going to have him have all these different gods. They're going to show all of it. And like I said, not all of it quite works. It's a little creaky. Also, too, so much of the movie is them just figuring out what the Manitou is, which if you've read the book, you know already. So a lot, I was kind of waiting. I'm like, all right, when are we going to get to this birthing scene? That's what I want to see. So I don't want to say that it's like a perfect horror classic. It takes a while to get. But I love that they just keep a straight face with it. Like, it is not campy. They're like, no, we're really committing to this bit. And I was really entertained. And there are some actually gruesome effects by the end of it. So yeah, I mean, I would probably give it more of like 3.5 stars, but I had a really good time watching it. And once again, man, just faithfulness to the source material. If you're going to choose source material to change up, it should probably be the Manitou. And I love that they didn't. They're like, no, man, we're going to go all out with this. And apparently there are like 8 Manitou books, which is crazy. There's a bunch of sequels. I don't know what else they do with it, but they have one called the Djinn, so like a genie, you know? And so maybe it inhabits, like I said, I don't know how well researched his native folklore is. I think he's just using this vague symbol as a means to do crazy, wacky Lovecraft shit. But anyway, really enjoyed it for what it is. Love that they went there. Love that they really tried to honor the book. I know the author was pretty pleased with it. And why wouldn't he be? Like, they keep all a bunch of shit they probably shouldn't have. You guys have both seen it though, right? What do you think about it?
I loved this movie. I think this movie is, which I can't wait for Mac, because Mac, your rating when I saw it on Letterboxd, I was like, how dare you, sir?
Believe this.
Like,
Teach his own.
Tony Curtis. I love Tony Curtis.
Like, yeah, anything, he's being a psycho, right? Janet Leigh's husband.
Anything he's in, like, I just find him so and I don't know a whole lot about his past. I know something. Yes, married to, you know, Janet Leigh, Jamie Lee Curtis's father. Like, I know this kind of stuff. But, like, I just find him so funny and endearing. He's kind of, like, I feel like at a party, he could be, like, wasted, but he would also be, like, really fun to be around. And his character in this, when he's wearing the cape and the tarot card, like, I would kill for that outfit. And his apartment, I'm like, I love it. And he's so, I don't exactly understand his full motivations for why he's going to such lengths to, you know, help this woman.
Well, that's what's weird about it, because in the book that she's just like someone who seeks his help, right? And this, they try to make it like, oh, they have this history. And what's funny too, in the book, he's still somewhat of a con artist in the book, but it's much more straight-laced, you know, like they're not doing the disguises for no reason and all that, which I like. It's funny because I heard all this stuff about Tony Curtis before I saw him in a movie, in any movie, and I guess I just thought he was more of a traditional kind of leading man. But he's almost like kind of flamboyant and this like court jester almost, which is very funny.
I think this movie is, it's just wild. It's like so goofy. It's like a great movie to watch, I think, like at a party or like with other people, because it's just bananas.
I saw this at the Music Box of Horrors.
What went wrong?
I don't know. I was like, this is wild. How can we not? We're going to like love it on some level. But I genuinely just like thought it was awful.
I mean, it is very not politically correct, not very racially sensitive. Yeah.
And it's possible we were like harping on that at the time or something, but not that I usually do that with like older films. You got to look at it in which time it was made stuff. But at the same time, like the content is, it's not just like, oh, we didn't cast so-and-so or whatever. It was like, no, like the whole story itself is kind of like, all right.
Yeah, but, well, it's also like, I mean, and Lovecraft was like a horrible racist, right? So it's a kind of fun. I'm using like native folklore to just like have elder gods from this like fucking whack job. I'm not a big Lovecraft
fan.
What
did you not like when the like alligator spirit thing just bit the guy's
hand?
I
love that outlet. Snake God or whatever.
Genuinely
awesome.
Erased this movie from my mind. It wasn't that long ago that I had seen it, but I love when this happens though, because both of you are giving it such a glowing review.
I mean, I feel compelled. The first half is very boring once it gets going.
But I feel compelled to rewatch it now. But I think I gave it like a half star. Or something.
You gave it, you did. You and Justin gave it star, and I went in there like three and a half. Like,
yeah,
this
I think I gave 3.5. But like I said, I'm coming out of the context of like this book that should be impossible to adapt, and they actually did adapt it very faithfully.
If that happened, if I read the book and I was like, there's no way they're going to do this, and then they did what they do, you know, like I could see that being like fun. Yeah. But
what about the birthing scene? Because I think the birthing scene, independently of anything else, is actually pretty creepy. Like,
That's the half star. No, honestly, the tagline here, what I want to read is, time could not stop him. Space could not hold him. Science could not destroy him. The Manitou, it has awakened. Great tagline.
Accurate to the movie.
Good seance sequence. I love a good seance sequence.
And check out this other tagline, in the grisly tradition of Alien. No joke.
Didn't he also do Grizzly?
The director did Grizzly, which is a Jaws ripoff. And this is kind of like an Exorcist ripoff a little bit. I don't know.
Another tagline, Dan. It says, possession marked the Exorcist. Demonic pregnancy erupted Rosemary's Baby. Warnings followed the omen. And the Manitou has it all combined.
That's exactly what... Oh my gosh, you're right. That's exactly what it is.
Didn't the director die in a helicopter accident before the movie came out, I think?
Oh, I don't know.
It says here in the trivia, shortly before the film's release, director William Girdler was killed in a helicopter crash in the Philippines while scouting locations for a future film. That's a
cursed
bummer.
Cursed film.
Now this is interesting. So this came out the same year as Halloween. So do you think Tony Curtis like called up Jamie Lee like, hey, like we made it. We made it, kid.
You made Halloween, I'm at the Manitou.
In the Manitou.
He was like, sorry, I can't make it to your premiere. I've got some interviews for the Manitou.
He's like, which is first? I'm assuming Manitou is first because Halloween came out around Halloween.
When did this come out?
He's like, Jamie, you may be the scream queen, but I'm the man. It too.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God. I'm just looking. Okay, wait. This came out April 28th.
So, yeah, Manitou predated Halloween.
So he was probably like, you know, on the press tour, like, hey, the Manitou's great. We don't even need to talk about this. This has sealed its place in horror history. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about a little film my daughter's doing.
Oh, yes. They have, I think they ended up becoming close, but I think they had a somewhat rocky relationship early on. Yeah, he was like he's a wild man a bit, I think.
I think he was a bit of a wild man from what I understand.
Man about town.
Yeah. I don't know enough to speak.
Some would might say a man about two.
Tune.
Yeah, a man about two. And that's on his gravestone. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I would highly suggest don't listen to Mac, you guys.
Yeah, Mac's voice is great.
Oh no, I highly recommend the movie. Seriously, it's wild.
Insane, yeah.
It's like you have to see it to believe it. Mm-hmm. Whether you like it or not, it defeats the purpose. I would absolutely recommend the movie.
It's okay, definitely too, because it has a pretty good cast. And I thought this reading the book, I'm like, man, they're just like delivering these weird lines so straightforwardly. Like they're just like, yes. Oh yeah, it must be. And they're just jumping. They're like, oh yeah, well, it must mean this Dutch ship. And it must be like, they're like, wait, how are they figuring out what all this lore is?
Oh yeah. It's yeah. There's a lot of logic leaps and a lot of things I don't understand, but at the same time, don't care.
Yeah, I like the effects a lot. I love that kind of cheesy neo psychedelic aesthetic.
Oh yeah, well, and it's so funny because I think in the movie they're like, none of your like science could possibly defeat him. The weight of 1,000 churches could never withhold him. And then it's like some lightning and some screaming, and then he's defeated.
and science, these computers. I mean, spoiler alert.
I know.
Yeah, but the lightning, where did that come from?
I couldn't believe they kept the computer. Well, and then the logic leaps of, oh, well, everything has a Manitou, including computers. Wait, what?
Yeah, where is that sequel?
There are seven more books.
We got to make it. We got to produce it. The first Halloweenies produced production.
We have the Manitou 2.
And has the 2, Manitou. You know, like dash 2, you know.
I think the Djinn is the next one, but then they get back to Manitou, like revenge. I think there's a Revenge of the Manitou
crossover.
Get Div off.
A Halloweenies production.
That's true. You know what? I think I could sell the rest of the Halloweenies on this. You guys love the Manitou. I know I can get Mike and Justin on board if we bring on Divoff.
Does Mike like Wishmaster? In our future. I know Justin does, but I mean, like, I use like in quotes.
Yeah, I think we're all Wishmaster like Wishheads. Supporters.
I think Wishheads. If we had the rights to the Manitou sequel and Divoff said, I'm going to do this, that everybody would be on board.
Oh, I would see. I would make a Manitou sequel of Divoff for sure.
Oh man,
there's some shared DNA with the in the opening of Wishmaster. One of my favorite effects is like the guy who turns into the crocodile, and there's that. I guess it's a snake god of Manitou, but it's kind of like a crocodile.
Hmm.
Yep. All right.
The wheels in my head are turning.
I'm into it, so I think we better go and talk about this and get to writing before we lose steam and forget about this, or somebody else steals the idea from us, because that's what tends to happen in these situations. Thanks so much for chatting movies, you guys, in our first now showing episode of the year. I love doing these, and it was so great to do them with you. But before we go, let's talk a little bit about what we have coming up. Mac, I believe you have it pulled up. What else is coming down the pipeline here?
Well, it's Shamrock time, baby. So we're going to be releasing Leprechaun 2, a commentary. We're going to continue our commentary run on Leprechaun series. Leprechaun 2 will be the next movie. I'm actually really excited because I haven't seen any of these movies, and I've been waiting patiently all year for Shamrock Day so I can watch Leprechaun 2. I'm not on this episode. I'm sure it's going to be fun. Dan?
No, I was going to say I have put off the Leprechaun movies also, but I did start to watch the first one around Halloween. I'll finish it at some point. But it was weird because it's the opening scene and worked it. You know, like most of the time they take their time revealing the monster worked. He just like walks in.
Oh, yeah.
Strolls in. Leprechaun. He just starts talking to this guy. He's like,
oh, that gold.
Like about the deal they made about the gold. It's like so weird. It's like right away. He just like walks in, has a conversation with this guy in the prelude. Like, all right, there we are. Leprechaun.
Well, the next, we're going to be unlocking our Bone Tomahawk episode, so you Tomahawk heads out there can jump on board that. And we're going to be recording session 9 tomorrow for the which is a rental, and that's right, Leprechaun 2 and the session 9 will be part of the Patreon, so join us there if you want to hear those. Dan's got some good stuff prepared. I just rewatched it, really looking forward to it, and I believe Mike will be joining us on that journey. And then of course we're all excited about Alien 3, which we will be dropping the first part of that by the end of the month. Really, really excited to dive into that realm again.
Oh, yeah. Very excited about, oh, man, so many thoughts, and I cannot wait to discuss them all with you guys. And over on Losers Club, too, a lot of fun stuff coming up. I know that we're going to be covering Joyland coming up soon. And I believe Justin is on that episode and I'm on that episode as well. So that will be fun. So check out Losers Club for all of your Stephen King needs. Dan, anything else you want to plug and talk about that you have coming up?
The Manitou is great. Go check out the Manitou. The Danitou. I mean, Danitou Caffrey.
Where'd you watch it?
I found it on, so it's not, I didn't think it was streaming anywhere. And you know me, I like to find those illegal streamer sites that break your computer, like Movies to Watch and TV Duck and Mega Upload and all that. But so I was just Googling Watch Manitou online free. And look, I usually love to support the artists and pay them. But look, I'm doing the Manitou a favor. I just talked about the Manitou longer than any other podcast this year probably has talked about it. So I earned it back. But anyway, point being, I found it on a legit site that's like not listed as a mainstreamer called Zumo, XUMO. It was like legit. It had ads and it was also look up Manitou Zumo and then you can watch it there legitimately. You don't have to go to TV Duck or Movies to Watch or Putlocker. Oh. Putlocker was a good one back in the day.
I love how you're an expert on this.
Well, they all get shut down eventually. So I don't think TV Duck's around anymore or Putlocker, but now it's Movies to Watch. is Mega Upload shut down? That was like sort of legitimate, but not really.
Yeah. I remember Mega Upload.
Yeah.
I don't know, guy. I buy the Blu-rays.
Look, I'm all about supporting the
horror,
artists.
Dan.
I'm supporting horror by reading the fucking Manitou. Not only like watching it, I read it. Talked about the Manitou so much. Everyone's got it. I guarantee you there will be dozens of people who go and watch the Manitou because of my analysis and recommendation right now.
We should start a poll on our Patreon to see how many people watched Manitou after this.
I mean, I would imagine a lot of our listeners have probably seen it, right? It's sort of
think.
Notorious, oh, I think.
Yeah. Its reputation precedes it, I think.
Your reputation precedes you.
You met my friend the Manitou.
All right. Well, until then, everybody go out and watch the Manitou. That it's great. But also support, you know, the new horror. And if you've seen something cool, we would love to hear about it because hopefully we'll have some more Now Showing episodes coming up. So if there's a new movie that you've seen, let us know. Leave them in the comments, you know, hit us up. And I don't know, maybe go over and give us a few stars and some reviews or check us out on Patreon because that's always super nice too. But until next time, until we venture off into space again, I think that's it. We did it, you guys. Thanks so much. And this is Lieutenant Rachel Reeves signing up.
This is the end of our show, for now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other Bloody Disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM podcast network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.